So, Dave, how are you doing?
Huh?
How are you feeling?
Good.
Good. So, we're recording this, it's been a while since I recorded you for Madness and God.
Yeah.
And one of the questions, I ran into a guy yesterday who had a quandary. He was came from a very religious family, and he is part of my Observing the Observant documentary that I've been working on for over a year. And what was interesting about him, David, was he found himself studying all of this religion and 18 hours a day and in the really dedicated nature. And his family had been one of the high ups in the religion. Turns out he's Hasidic.
Yeah.
And he had a quandary, which many people have, and which you seem to have had too, possibly. He wanted to see if there was a way of taking religion on knowledge, not on faith.
Yeah, I think it's the other way around, to be honest. I think knowledge is only where faith lacks. Knowledge can be a helpmate only where faith lacks. And once you have the faith, the knowledge can get in the way as an impediment, because you can puff yourself up with pride with knowledge, but faith is always humbling. If, you know, I don't think God is so pleased with a man who's filled with knowledge, has every knowledge. I think he's more pleased with somebody who just believes and doesn't have to have a reason. God is beyond anything that can be measured. Knowledge is kind of a measuring tool of the immeasurable. But like I say, it can only help where the faith is lacking. If you lack faith, then you have to search in knowledge. Knowledge can be an impediment. Once you have the faith, you should just kind of leave the knowledge behind.
And what about your
experience? Only use it when the faith again challenges you. I think what God does is he challenges a man with lack of faith, because I believe faith comes from God, really. And if he challenges a person with lack of faith, he wants that person to search for him, even though the man can't really believe, the man can't really see what the point of it is. And he challenges a person to search anyway. God takes delight in a person like that. I really believe that. In my case, I wanted to, but, you know, there's a prayer. It was written by Pope Paul VI, who was a pope, three popes ago. And he wrote a prayer, and the beginning of the prayer goes, "I believe, I wish to believe." And it's a beautiful prayer in its entirety, but I like that. I mean, I thought that's a wonderful thing, and that's exactly where I was at that time. The only thing I could believe in was that I wanted to believe, even though there were many questions that challenged me. As for me, I searched in all the religions, and I came to the conclusions that I did, where I just believe now, and I don't really have to blow myself up and puff myself up in wisdom and pride and how much knowledge can I have, how much knowledge. Because God has all knowledge anyway. He's not pleased by that. He's not pleased in a man. He's pleased in a person's piety and love of God and love of fellow man. I mean, he's not pleased by knowledge. But knowledge can help. If your faith is lacking, you can search in knowledge, and maybe you'll get the answer in a new way that you're looking for that you missed before. I think faith is the important thing. Knowledge is not the important thing.
We've talked before about maybe knowledge only goes so far, and
I believe faith is like a helpmate. Faith is like a wife. I mean, knowledge is like a wife. What knowledge is the helpmate, and it can help you where your faith is lacking. You can get substance from knowledge about faith. But I don't think knowledge. I think faith is the end in itself. I don't think knowledge is the end in itself.
Now, you were saying earlier about your own experience of knowledge.
Well, I didn't really have faith, and like I say, I just wanted to believe. I knew enough that there has to be a God. I couldn't count myself amongst the atheists or even the agnostics. I believe that much, but there were still so many questions about all the houses of religion that I heard about. There were still questions that were unresolved. I guess that knowledge itself, that there were flaws, led to troubles with my faith. So, but what I did do was I searched into knowledge, and I came to the answers that I came to, and then now I really rarely read that much anymore. I just read as a little delight with God. You know, sometimes I feel like I want to delight with God, and I'll read His great words. It's not an end to itself. I saw that it was becoming an end to itself, and it wasn't the faith. It wasn't just the simple great feeling, the great peace when you know there is a God and you know He has all things in hand and everything works the way He wants eventually. That gives me a great peace, and whereas knowledge doesn't give me a great peace. Knowledge, I just seem to puff myself up with knowledge, you know, like blow myself up like a big bird, whatever, you know, searching after knowledge. Like I said, it's only there to help where faith lacks. It's a helpmate. It's not an end to itself. And some people just have faith. They're just born with it. They never lose it. They never search. They never have to search anywhere because they have the faith. And that's a beautiful thing. I wish I could have been that way. I wasn't that way. There were too many questions that troubled me. And I guess that was knowledge itself, handing me a fruit, saying, search in me, and don't have faith. I should have just accepted it on faith, maybe. I would have saved myself a lot of trouble.
Talking about trouble, what kind of trouble have you had? What has your life been like?
Well, I'm a diagnosed schizophrenic, and one of the reasons why I've had trouble maybe with faith is that I've had a lot of visions and voices since early childhood that always presented themselves. It seemed to take a religious format, and yet there was a lot of fishy things about these visions that I couldn't trust in them. I was frightened of them, so somehow, out of it, I searched for the truth about God. I wanted to know the truth about God, because my faith was challenged by these visions. Like, I couldn't believe in the vision. I could believe in God, but I couldn't believe they were from God. And I don't think, I'd say 99% of them weren't from God. And I think there are a lot of forces out there, like the Bible, always trouble the man with the false gods. You know, they're always the false, not the Bible did, but it always told the story of how the false gods trouble people. There are many false gods out there in the universe, and in the mind of man, many idols that a person constructs for themselves. And I think I was constructing idols for myself. My mind was, because I was challenged by certain things that the religious authorities were pumping with me with as a child, and I couldn't accept them. Like I went to the school with the nuns, and they were teaching me all various things that, unless you're a Roman Catholic, you go to hell. I mean, all Jews go to hell. All Protestants go to hell. All Hindus go to hell. And I just had to search for a way that I could find out how could God have chosen the Jewish people and still be the God of the other religions. And that's what I was searching for, in a way that He just didn't create human beings just to be cursed forever in hell just because they're born a certain way. And yet I wanted to find a solution that I could say, where I could believe that God is the God of all people, but yet that this God chose the Jewish people for His own particular purposes. And I believe what He has done, He has given the Gentiles so very much, certainly they will not deny Him one people just for Himself. And that's the conclusion I came to in that book I wrote that I gave you. That's the fruit of my searching. My whole life long, I've been searching for that for answers. And I came to that conclusion in a way that satisfied me. I don't think it'll satisfy anybody. The Gentiles are not going to like it. The Jewish people are not going to like it because it embraces the truth, what I believe that Jesus was trying to teach, And so it's just an endeavor that was really just for me, between me and God, in my own way. I don't think anybody will accept this, that book, you know, ultimately, but just me. You know, so it's just a vanity, maybe, but at least I came to the conclusion that I came to, and now I have faith, and it can be disquieting sometimes. Nonetheless, it's the faith I was searching for.
Two questions that come to mind is, one is this search for knowledge.
I wasn't a search for knowledge, Gio. What I was embarking on was a search for faith. In a way, like, how could I believe God is good? What the nuns presented me with as an early, maybe 6 years old, was that every other religion goes to hell. Even other Christians that aren't Roman Catholic go to hell just because of the way they were brought up. And I couldn't accept that. So I said, is God good or is he evil? Did he create human beings just to be tormented and roasted forever in hell? Just because, did he create them just for that purpose? So what... I mean, the nun was a little bit carried away who said that, and it stuck in me. I mean, because I believe my parents don't go to church on Sunday, so they're going to roast forever, and everybody that was near and dear to me was roasting forever in hell, and that troubled me greatly. So I guess my subconscious was creating all these various idols of all these visions and all these voices that led me nowhere. So I searched amongst all the religions, and I came, like I said, I came to the conclusions that I came to, but it wasn't a search for knowledge. It was a search for a God that is good, not evil. Now, there's a saying in Jeremiah, the prophet, where he says, I am life, I am death, I'm good and evil, why do you search elsewhere? But he said, choose life, not death, choose good, not evil. So I think what God was saying at that context is that he can turn evil if the people choose false gods. If a person will choose the falsity over the true, God will indeed turn evil. But he repents of his evil. Man is in the image of God, and there are many instances in the Bible where, say, Moses went up and interceded for the people when God said, well, I'll repent of this evil. So, but I believe God is ultimately good, even though he can be capable of evil, just like any human being can in his image. That's the whole point, that the question man was presented with in the beginning, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. I believe God chooses the good over the evil, and I believe man should choose the good over the evil, too. But that's what I was searching. I wasn't searching for knowledge, Gio. I was searching for faith in a God that is good, that doesn't create human beings just to roast forever in hell, doesn't create a human being just for you know, he created them. Why would he create them just to destroy them? I mean, it's just foolishness. So I wasn't searching for knowledge. I was searching for faith in God.
But you were searching for it in knowledge, though.
But I was searching for it in knowledge because that's all that I had. For a while, I was searching for it in drugs and things like that, beyond knowledge in word, beyond knowledge in religion, beyond knowledge in structured religion, because those knuckleheads, Timothy Leary and Baba and Richard Alpert, were talking about seeing God and LSD and all that kind of thing, so I was searching for it in drugs, but I ultimately found nothing. I found nothing but evil in those things, and they were a waste of time, so then I started... A psychiatrist, who was actually a Jewish psychiatrist, and he was a very, very nice man. And he said, you're always talking this, talking that about God. He goes, why don't you give yourself a firm foundation in God and search amongst all the religions, search for what God is really about. And then you have a foundation to build on. And that's when I started searching into not so much knowledge, but trying to find out... how a faith could be in a God that is good, how a faith could be amongst men. And I searched for that. It wasn't a search for knowledge. It was a search for faith, really.
And where did that search take you?
It took me through all the religions of the world, even esoteric religions and New Age religions. And it's been a search... That bore fruit want the I just wanted the faith. I didn't want the knowledge. And now, so, when I pump myself up on knowledge, I just leave it behind. And I just have a simple knowledge that I know certain, and it gives me great happiness.
And you've studied, you've read.
Let's say I have certain faith, a certain faith in God that gives me great knowledge, great happiness, not great knowledge.
David, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Now, just for anybody who might listen to this, how many times have you read the Quran?
I read the Quran 4 times. I read the Jewish and Christian Bibles, the one big book that the Christians call the Bible. I've read that cover to cover 2x. I read the Book of Mormon 2x. I've read mythologies, and I've read thousands and thousands of pages. And
you've read the Bhagavad Gita?
I read that. I read Hindu scriptures. I read Buddhist scriptures, and I came to the conclusion I came to, that God is good. He does speak to people in various ways, but for whatever reason, he chose the Jewish people as his peculiar treasure. And I'm not Jewish, but I love God for doing that, that he just started to make a choice. Because without choice, all seems virtue. But as it turns out, in an unused conscience, without choice is fact, all is soon ignorance. So I believe that the Jewish people were chosen because God makes a choice, and he allows man to make a choice in his image. He doesn't want us to be slaves and robots. I mean, if God wanted a slave that just does this and does that at the push of a button, he would have built a robot. He wouldn't have built man. And man has been struggling with these questions, and indeed, probably God struggles with the question of choice. You know, I remember the story in the Torah where it was tough out in the desert after they were freed from slavery in Egypt, and they were complaining to Moses. They were saying, why can't we go back to Egypt? At least we had food. At least we had water, even though we were slaves. So being free is a great, great difficulty. You can be a slave and just be an autonomon. And that'll bring you a certain amount of happiness and peace, but the struggle for glory really is the struggle of freedom. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's not easy thinking for yourself, making choices. You know, and I think that's a blessing, and in a way, it's a curse. You know, because the people were out in the desert. They had no water. They had no food. So they were grumbling. I mean, and God punished them for grumbling and complaining. He was saying, why did you despair for my name's sake? You shouldn't have despaired. I brought you out of Egypt. Wouldn't I have helped you this way? Wouldn't I have helped you that way? Why are you despairing for my name's sake? You know, and now the Jewish people are the people that have this great blessing, and they also have this great curse that they ought to have no other God but that God. I don't have any other God. I believe Jesus was sent as an image that we could learn from, and perhaps even the image that we're made out of, but as like a new Adam, like all generations following an observance of heritage. But I don't think he's the end-all and be-all. I think he was just an image that God gave to Moses and compassion, because God is too terrible to actually look upon and see. So he has to send an image, and I believe he sent that messianic image to Moses. And he said that he would raise it up on the, raise up as the image. But the people chose the golden calf, the calf that they constructed out of the gold from the Egyptians, that the Egyptians gave them as they were leaving. So they still wanted something of the past. They still wanted something of the idols of the other peoples.
And what is your golden calf? And maybe you can talk a little bit about spiritual pride as a golden calf.
I believe I have touched on the spiritual pride because I think knowledge can lead to spiritual pride if it's not used only as a helpmate. When it's used as an end in itself, it becomes a golden calf or a serpent, really. Because I don't think God is pleased by a person's wisdom. He's pleased by a person's piety, his humility. I don't think he's pleased by wisdom. I mean, I think that's spiritual pride. I mean, the legend of why Lucifer was one. I mean, this is a legend in Christianity and Islam, that Lucifer was once God's most trusted angel, but Lucifer wanted more. He wanted to be God in place of the God that he only worked for, and that's why he fell from heaven. And man, in turn, he tempted man. This is a lore, L-O-R-E, of Christianity and Islam. And then he tempted man to do the same thing. Man had everything. He had paradise. He had everything he could want. Everything was supplied for him. But he wanted more. He wanted to be a god, you know. And I think in time, a person is given the fruit of divine union, where you become like a god. Because even God said that right after Adam and Eve took the fruit. Said, "Oh, so now you are as gods like me," you know. And then there's a psalm of King David where he says, "I've said you are gods, but man will fall like every other ruler." And I think that's the lesson that Jesus was teaching. That there's a time for union, and there's a time for not. Just like an unripe fruit. You know, God was displeased with man because he was commanded not to take it. Doesn't say he wouldn't have eventually given it to him. But he had to wait. He had to wait. There's a term. There's a time. There's a purpose to God's way of doing things.
And where does spiritual pride come in?
Spiritual pride is basically puffing yourself up on your own self, on your own knowledge, on your own even wisdom, and I think that was the sin of man in taking that fruit. But real divine union, when God gives the fruit, I believe the fruit is simply the word on the page. I believe that is that the tree of life is and the tree of good and evil is the words of the Bible themselves. And in due time, God will give that fruit in union, but not puffed on wisdom or knowledge, but based on humility and piety. But this is getting a little confusing. We're getting too far afield from the original track. I've said some things that are a little confusing, and I don't think some people would understand them. But I think God will give the fruit. If you, he will, like, there's a saying of Jesus where he said, "Would a man ask for an egg and a father ask a father for an egg and his father hand him a serpent?" But man didn't ask God for that fruit. He asked the serpent. He was tricked by the serpent. I think God would have given him in due time. And I think the fruit is simply the fruit of knowledge of good and evil. That good things can come, like you would say, pruning a tree. I mean, it's an evil to the tree because it's losing its branches, it's feeling the pain of its branches being cut. But if the branches aren't cut, the tree will die before its time. And I think that's the knowledge that God has, and he will eventually give that to man if he asks God, if he doesn't take it. I think God would have given it to him. Man took it before its time, so it's bad. It's just like a pious woman who's chaste, and she reserves herself for her husband in marriage. Before she's married, she stays a virgin. And at the time of her marriage, she gives up her virginity. So what is good at one place is not good at another place. It wouldn't be good for her to hold on to her virginity if she's married. But before she's married, before she is married before God, then it is given by God for her to lose her virginity. Before that time, it is evil. And that's the question I think the Bible asks. I think that's the lesson Jesus was taught you. He didn't call himself a son of God like he's equal with God. He just said, he quoted that psalm when he called himself the son of God. He said, well, have you heard what David said when he said, I have said you are all gods, when he was quoting God. You're all sons of the Most High. He wasn't saying he's the son. I mean, that somehow Christianity has painted him as this divine son of God, like a God actually had a son that in that way. I think it's a different story. I think it's an entirely different story.
What do you think the story is?
I think it's that to be the son of God is to be son of what God gave Moses originally.
I can't hear you.
To be a son of God is to have the law given to you as if God first gave it to Moses with his finger. It was written with God's finger. The people below the mountaintop wanted the golden calf. They wanted to be sons of the beast, sons of, say, even the most cunning of beasts. They wanted a different God. They didn't wait for what Moses was coming down from the mountain with. And Moses threw the commandments down and smashed them. Now God gave them again, but nowhere does it say he gave it with his finger. And the sin of golden calf remained on the law the second time. Nothing was talked about that sin was removed. Now, the whole point, I think, of Jesus' mission, the whole point of the Gospels points to one pointing of Jesus. When the people wished to stone a woman caught in sin, they said it's written in the law that this woman be stoned. So Jesus just wrote with his finger on the ground. He didn't say anything. So they said, well, what should we do? Should we stone this woman? They were testing him. So again, he wrote with his finger on the ground. And he finally said, who is without sin? Cast the first stone. So what he was really saying is, who is without sin upon these stones? Who is without sin upon stones and stoning? How can you call yourself practitioners of the law if you're not written with the interpretation of finger placed by God, like a son of God reading the scriptures, and not a son of the beast? And I believe the difference lies in interpretation. If you read the Bible according to the golden calf, of course it's going to be a beastly thing. But if you read it according to how it was placed by God's finger, it's a completely different story.
So what do you say?
The words are the same, but the interpretation is completely different. But we've gone far afield from where we started from, Gio.
Hold on a second, because I want to bring it back. So now we've touched on variations all circling around the original conversation, which is about this young man who is looking for knowledge without faith. And
well, that's where I think the mistake is. Knowledge is what you see on face value. Knowledge, wisdom, that you can have knowledge according to the interpretation of an idol, like a golden calf. It'll shine gold and it'll look, feel like gold, but it's not necessarily placed, that interpretation placed by God's finger. And that's the real knowledge. There's a false knowledge and a real knowledge, but once you have the real knowledge, you don't have to search for wisdom. You don't have to search for puffing up and pride. You can give glory to God for his wisdom, but you can't glory yourself in what you've learned. There are many instances of, but I think we've gone far afield from our original task. I was getting far afield and I was losing the point.
No, I don't think so. I think maybe trying to focus, I actually think you made, they were all circling the same point. But one of the things I think about is in our earlier conversation, you had mentioned to keep on.
I would say if you don't have faith, then you need knowledge. Because you can learn, because God, he's not going to leave a person, if a man doesn't have faith, he's not going to leave him, God is not going to leave him like in a rowboat without an oar in the middle of an ocean. He's going to give him the oar. He's going to give him the oars. He's going to show him a way of how he can have that faith. And he'll do so through the helpmate knowledge. But I think once you have the faith, faith is a very simple, humble, pious thing, but it is difficult because, like I say, it's freedom. There is freedom in faith. And it's not the way of slavery. I mean, you can have all that you wanted if you're just a slave and you just let somebody push the buttons. But if you really think for yourself, that there's always a struggle there. Just like the people wandering in the desert. But if you don't despair in God's name, like the same God that delivered the people from slavery, he'll give them food and water. You know, but you have to believe. And I don't think the belief is necessarily always found in knowledge. Some people just have faith. It's a slave, but they just simply have faith. And it's God-given. It's a blessed thing. I certainly wouldn't want to take it away from anybody, and it has it. Well, anyway, Gio,
no,
I'm kind of
second.
Winded. I'm kind of getting hot, and I want to turn on the fan, and the fan is going to drown out our...
Right. Well, one last question.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about your own voyage into...
We already talked about that, Gio.
No, but we
talked about that. I couldn't believe in the things that was presented to me. So I was searching for, and not only in terms of visions and voices, but what people were saying in terms of religion, that I had to find a search for God, God's truth, really. And that I found in my own way, and I don't really puff myself up on knowledge, because it is a simple thing. And it is there is struggle to it because it gives a man a certain freedom. You know there's a God that loves all people, even though he chose one people for his own purposes. And there is a reason to it all, and there is a method, and there is you don't have to pump yourself up on it. So anyway, gee, I'm going to have to get off because I'm getting very hot and it's very humid. I want to turn on the fan. It's going to drown out our phone.
I would like for you to think of one thing, and then we can talk maybe a little later at some point in time about the purpose of religion in the sense of what, in this search of faith, what is the pros and cons in following a religious path as you have, in your own experience, have had issues with your own religion as you have as a young person.
Okay, I'll think about that, and we'll talk another time.
Okay, sounds good, David.
Okay, take care.
Great,
Gino.
Great, thank you.
Sure.
Good.
Bye-bye. Bye. Hello?
Hello, hello. So we're ready for another installment?
Yeah.
What brought this on? We only talked about a half hour ago.
Yeah, I decided I was getting too far afield. I wanted to tie it up in a way that it maybe would render a little more understanding to the. It was getting a little far afield, so I just wanted to kind of bring it back. Now, you you were mentioning about spiritual pride. And like knowledge will always, and that always falls into the realm of knowledge, because that was the man's first sin, was the sin of choosing the knowledge of good and evil, of all that God gave him in the garden. Now, like the golden calf, or what the people preferred to the law that was that God was giving with his one finger, people preferred the golden calf. Now, the golden calf might have been very well constructed and artfully crafted and a wonderful thing to look upon, but it wasn't what God wanted man to understand with just his one finger. So there's a difference in interpretation on the law ever since, I believe. Now, one way that could be brought as an example is that it says that Moses said to kill all those responsible, and the tribe of Levi started killing a lot of people. I forget how many people they killed for those responsible for the golden calf. Now, that could be interpreted that they really did kill them. But when it really comes down to it, the only one that was not responsible, even Aaron was responsible, and Aaron wasn't killed. The only one not responsible was Joshua, who sat at the law's bottom waiting faithfully for Moses to come down. So the only one that shouldn't have been slain was Joshua. So there was something else that was meant when it says that all those people were slain. Since all that were responsible weren't slain. So there's a difference in interpretation of the Bible, that maybe they were reprimanded awfully and that they died within themselves, or maybe they died in a different way. There was something else meant, I believe, in interpretation. An interpretation according to the calf would mean that those people were really slain, but it's not a truth, because the only one who wasn't responsible was Joshua, because he was the only one who sat up, even Aaron, who later became the great priest, the first priest of the nation of Israel. He's the one who cast it. He listened to the people, and he did what they asked, and he cast. So he wasn't slain. So there's a difference in meaning. And what I think the meaning is that maybe they were slain within. Maybe they were reprimanded terribly, and there was like almost like a death. But I don't think those people were really slain, because the only one not responsible, as it's stated in the first place, was Joshua. You know, so I think there's an understanding and meaning, and man has been really behaving like a beast in many ways. But it comes down to the knowledge of good and evil. I mean, you can interpret the law in an evil way, even according to an idol's viewpoint, or you can interpret it placed by God's finger, where you do become like God-like, God-like an image. As a son, you know, placed by a law placed by God's finger alone, or that placed by the golden calf. There's a very interesting thing. When Moses was first summoned by God, Moses asked for proof. He said, "Well, how do I know you're really, you know, the God of God?" And he said, "Take your shepherd's staff and throw it down." And it turned into a serpent then. And he goes, "Now raise it back up," and it turned again into a shepherd's staff. So that's kind of like the law. The law first fell down the mountaintop. The first time it was, the law was kind of like twice established too. It was given by God's finger, then it was thrown down, turned into a, not the most cunning of beasts, but another beast, the golden calf. And then constantly God would tell, raise up the tabernacle as you saw on the mount. So I think the law is meant to be raised up again. And I think that's all that Jesus was talking about as the Son of God, as calling himself the Son of God, that we're all sons of God if the law is raised up the way it was meant to be. But both versions were meant to be, just as Moses' staff was first thrown down and turned into two of the most cunning of beasts and then raised up again. It was twice established, kind of like the law. So it's very, very interesting. To me, this point is that the Bible itself is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And that's just the way it is. It's not said that it wasn't meant to happen. It was just meant to happen that way. That's how it's written. And there'll constantly people will be searching for false idols, but God tests us this way. But I think I made even less sense than I did the first time. I should have left it alone.
Well, before you make even less sense, let me ask you a question about your relationship and feelings that the Bible is allegorical and not to be taken.
Well, I believe that the Bible is allegorical. I think when you see it as anything else but allegorical and holding great spiritual meaning and not necessarily just fact, because I think a fact can be like a golden calf. It's something that's a God you can see rather than the God that was really showing himself, and a God that made of man's hands that people could see as in a golden calf, an idol made of man's hands. Whereas the image God was showing Moses, and it was an image, because God is too terrible to look upon. So he actually said in the law, I'm showing you a similitude, an image, because I'm too terrible to look upon as I actually am. So the whole story of the Bible is the image we were meant to be made in that God showed Moses, or the image that man makes of himself with the golden calf. And the question is the whole story of the whole Bible through all its pages. And I think the whole mission of Jesus was simply pointing with that one finger, saying, who is without sin on these stones? How can you stone a woman if you're with sin yourself? Who without sin concerning these stones? I think that's the whole point. And it is indicative that it is a point that he was pointing in the ground. That's the whole point of the Gospels. And he was just pointing to that fact that we're with sin with this law, and it has to be raised up again. And I think that's the whole point of resurrection. Christians have made a whole kind of idol out of it themselves, but I think that's what's meant by the resurrection of the dead. That the shepherd's staff is thrown down like the law is thrown down, turned into a beast, or one case the most cunning of beasts, second case the beast of the golden calf, then it's raised up again. And why does God do this? There's a saying in one of the prophets is that why did God make men walk through the fire of the golden calf? I think it's I believe it's Ezekiel, and it said, because I saw that the people were a stubborn lot in the desert when they wandered for 40 years, and they're always grumbling and complaining, so I made them walk through fire. And that's the test. The walk through fire is the test of the golden calf. But I think it's meant to be. I think, that's the fruit, that's the knowledge of the fruit, the good from evil. And you have to choose good, you can't choose the evil.
Now, could you talk a little bit about religion and your relationship to religion and what happens?
Well, I believe the religions are the repositories of the tree, in their own way, of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And religions have behaved very evilly in many ways, and they really should be raised out of that now. I mean, it's very strange that the Christian religion, I believe Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, have been savage mistreaters of Jewish people. If Jesus turned the cheek, as he always says, turn the other, if somebody strikes you, turn the other cheek, Jesus turned the cheek to the Gentiles, who were the biggest problem to the Jewish people in the beginning, by tempting the people with all their false gods. If Jesus turned the cheek to the Gentiles and allowed them into the Christian religion, why do they not think that Jesus will turn the cheek to the Jewish people for the supposed mistreating of them? Now, nowhere does Jesus said, nobody takes my life from me. I lay it down for the forgiveness of sin. So the Christians have been long calling the Jews murderers, but Jesus said, nobody takes my life from me. I lay it down. They think that somehow the Gentiles think they're the chosen ones in Christians. Even the Muslims believe that God chose a new people over the... It's just crazy. It's crazy. He chose the Jewish people. He even told Moses at one point, I want to take a new people. And Moses interceded and said, don't do this thing. I know this people are a stubborn lot, but don't do this thing. And God said, okay, I won't do it, nor will I ever do it. So he didn't choose a new people for himself. And these are when I was reading the Bible as a young man, these are the questions that plagued me. Then why do the Gentiles claim Jesus as their very own, having nothing to do with the Jewish people, or that the Jewish people are as if lepers? And these are the questions that plagued me as a child. I wanted to know this, and I couldn't have faith in Jesus or God of Israel or God of anywhere unless I had the answers to these questions. And I've really been searching for, I'd say, at least more than 50 years. And I have the answers that at least apply to me in my own way. Whether it will mean anything to anybody else, I don't know.
How did you come about those answers? What was your process?
By searching through the scriptures. By searching through the scriptures and by asking questions, and that they were, in their own way, as I was writing these books of mine, the answers just seemed to flow as I was writing. The answers just seemed to come to me. I won't call it voice or vision, because it wasn't voice or vision. I've seen so many of those, and they've all just really turned out to be false gods and false notions in my own mind. But the answers came to me in a wonderful way, you know.
But what
I speak of it's not meant to be spoken. That's why I think these are really a waste of time. Because it's best written. I can make more sense of it. I can't speak these things out in a way that can make any sense to anybody, I don't think. But somehow I can write them in a way. And I don't think that the books are meant to be published, because I think each person is meant to find their own way to God. I don't think that it's meant to be handed to a person. The religions have their place the foremost place of disseminating the ideas of God as they've been presented to the various prophets.
And what happens when you go into a house of worship?
I run into trouble personally because of my mental illness, the past voices and visions. I mean, I run into trouble. There's a lot of trauma there, and for the sake of my sanity, I don't go into the church too much. I've tried it so many times. I mean, I used to go week in, week out, even 3-4 times a week, and now over the last 8 years. I've been into the churches about masses and all that, and celebrations, what they call the celebration of the mass, about 45 times since that time. I've been to confession many times, but on a regular basis, I can't seem to handle it mentally.
What does it do to you?
It just troubles me greatly. I just get very very wired up, and I realize for the sake of my family, for the sake of myself, I basically have to stay back.
And you once talked about how the Bible and religious scriptures weren't meant for the intellectuals?
I think they're meant for the people of faith. I don't think it, like I say, knowledge is kind of like a golden calf. It's wonderfully crafted. It looks beautiful to look upon, but it's not necessarily what God was giving on the mountaintop. It wasn't knowledge necessarily. I think God desires to be loved by us, and I don't think he desires us to puff up ourselves in knowledge and wisdom and try to be his equal. I think he does so much for all of us. He gives us life. No matter one way or the other, he gives us life. And I don't think he wants us to puff ourselves up in knowledge. And maybe in a way that's what I did. I went through both extremes of finger of God and golden calf in my own way. And I think that's how it's meant to be, just as the staff was thrown down, turned into a serpent, came up again as a staff. It's how God gives us life. I mean, Joseph the patriarch, the 11th son of Jacob, interpreted a dream of Pharaoh, and he told Pharaoh, since the dream was twice established, was really two successive dreams, said as the dream was twice established, it was from God. So the law, basically, was twice established. It was first given by God's fingertip, then Moses threw that down and smashed it because the people cast a golden calf. Then God gave the law a second time, a second establishment. But I think all that Jesus was saying is that just as Moses' shepherd's staff was raised again as a shepherd's staff and it didn't remain as a serpent, the law is meant to be raised to its original. The words are the same in both establishments, but the interpretation, the love, the humor of God, and not of sword, not of hard metal sword striking people and killing people, I think that's what Jesus was talking about with the resurrection. I think that's what the whole theme means. And there's something very interesting, too, about the law. Jesus said something interesting. He said, a seed, unless it falls to the ground and dies, bears no fruit. And I mean, it's true that the law was meant to die, man was meant to fall from paradise, but it was meant to be raised again. You know, God sees all, how could a thing happen that God doesn't know about? So God foresaw all these things. He saw the people would be a stubborn lot in the desert, that's why he made them walk through the fire. I mean, that's the Bible. That's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But God is certainly not pleased by man's knowledge. He's pleased by man's obedience and his love of him in that obedience. He doesn't expect people to obey him because just for the sake of obeying. That's a robot. Push the button and it does this and does that. If God would have made a robot, he wouldn't have made a man. He wants man to love him. Obey him out of that love. No other reason. Not because of knowledge, not because of this, not because of the other thing. He wants man to love him. And I think that was the whole message of what Jesus was basically saying. But the Christians lost sight of it because they started persecuting the Jews. I mean, that's crazy. Jewish people were the chosen people. They were the people that God refused, that said that he would choose until the end of time. Forever. So it's just crazy. And now even the Quran constantly retells and tells stories of Moses, of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob, of Joseph, of Jonah. It tells and retells all these stories, but they forget that it's all these stories are about the Jewish people. They wasn't about the Arabs. You know, so there's really no reason for these wars, but maybe there is reason that because that's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Only God knows why there are wars. Only God knows why there are periods of peace. Only God knows these things. Man, when he tries to know these things, he usually takes up the sword and starts striking his neighbor. You know, so to me, there's nothing more fascinating than the God of the Bible. There's nothing more fascinating. But I realize that God really wants me to obey him. out of love and not out of knowledge. So I try not to puff myself up on knowledge. I give glory to God for his knowledge, not for mine. I have no knowledge. God's knowledge is great. God's wisdom is great, not man's. Man's is a wonderfully crafted thing like a golden calf, but it's not the simple love that God gives us in this book.
You have talked before to me about who wrote all the scriptures and what you're feeling about.
It's strange. Just like a man and a woman have a son, they can't call themselves God and say, I created that. They can't do that. So God had a hand in it. They were kind of like the messengers of God's desire to create another human being. They weren't the gods. It came through man, but God is the one who created the child. If a child is born, a father can't call it that he's the child of God. God had created him. But man was the vessel that God created the child through. Just the same with the Bible. Men were the vessels of God's words. They didn't create it. If they wrote what man writes is a golden calf. The Bible is just an endlessly fascinating book. That's why I believe what Jesus says about eternal life. I think we get to glory in God forever. I don't think it ends with death. Then death would be the God of all.
What do you mean?
Well, if death has the final say over every man's life, then death is the ultimate God, right? And I don't believe that. I believe God is the God of the living.
And what do you believe?
I believe that God is the God of the living. He's not the God of death. He'll send his angel of death to do this and do that if when people do wrong. But I don't think death is the final God. I don't think death is the final say. That's why I believe as the Christian, even the Muslims believe in a hereafter. So. Now, Buddhists and Hindus believe in constant reincarnation, but that's just according to the flesh. I believe reincarnation has a different meaning now, that we're born, reborn many times in the heavens. And what do I mean by being born and reborn is just that we glory in God at one moment, then we have to rest and kind of like observe a Sabbath rest and be dead to all things, and then we come alive again in the heavens to God's knowledge, wisdom and love and knowledge. I think we really awaken to God's love, not to his knowledge.
And
so I don't think a reincarnation exists in the flesh. I don't buy that, because then how could the few people, how could Adam and Eve have multiplied into many people? I mean, time seems to progress in that way of multiplying more and more. How do the few reincarnate for the many? That doesn't make any sense. So I don't think there is a thing such as reincarnation. I don't think we come back to this earth. Reincarnation means basically resurrection in heaven, constant resurrections in heaven. I heard there was a very interesting preacher by the name of Jesse Duplantis, and he asked God what it meant that there's a certain story in the book of Revelation in the Christian Bible about these angels going around on a circle. When they reached the summit of the circle, they gave glory to God. Night and day they did this. And he wanted to know why they went around in a circle, and he said that God is the same. But each time they turned around in a circle, they saw the same God, but in a different way. And he said that God came to him in a vision and showed him that. That's why the angels went around the circle. Every time it was renewed, they saw him in a new way.
I think that's
what's meant by reincarnation.
Let's talk a little closer to the phone or something.
I think that's what's meant by reincarnation. I think it's just going around that circle in the heavens, though, not on the earth. That's just a thing of flesh. That's just according to man's flesh and desire. I don't think it has to do with God.
And can you talk to me a little bit about mental issues and mental illness?
Well, mental illness has basically been my cross. since early childhood. I've always had the crazy. Sometimes they seem to make a little sense. Just for maybe 1% of the time, they seem to make a little sense. And the rest of the time, I'm crashed down, and they just seem to be illusions and delusions. So I accept the diagnosis. I'm mentally ill, and the only truth I really see is in the scriptures. And the conclusion that led me to is that God is a very loving God, and He wants us to love Him more out of obedience than anything else. So to that love, obedience to that love.
And madness in God, because there are a lot of people who are mad with God, and who are in...
Who are in madness because of God?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's kind of like the tree. Sometimes God's words are thrown down from a shepherd's staff leading the sheep happily over the mountaintop. They're thrown into a serpent, they're thrown into a golden calf, they're thrown into a beastly thing. But it's kind of like part of man's life, because man is stubborn. He has to keep on learning these lessons. But I think in the heavens, it's more like just going around in that circle, seeing God a new way each time, that we have to lose our vision for a second. As the circle goes down and goes into another loop and goes away from God's face, we lose our vision, we lose our bearing, and then we come to see Him in a new way. And I think that's the movement of the heavens, the circle of life.
And what about the influence or implication of religion and people who think they're God and people and madness?
Very interesting poem that I wrote. It's in that book I gave you. It says, "I have said you are gods in 9 ways, and in 1 way I have said I am." And I think that's meant that God gave 10 commandments originally as the beginnings of the law.
Look closer to the phone.
Yeah. Now 1 commandment is reserved only for God. That the first commandment is, have no other God but me. You know, I'm the God who led you out of Egypt. Have no other God. And the second commandment is, have no women. All the other things refer basically to man, like make no image of this God. But the first commandment is reserved solely for God, and that's why the people were always told to tithe. Tithe is an offering of 1/10 left reserved for God. Always he said to reserve 1/10 and a tithe. And that's always reserved, that 1 commandment. So God didn't say that the serpent told the lies, just that a truth before its time is as bad as a lie. He said, now you are as God, knowing good from evil like me. And, it was just before its time, and that's why it was a sin, because it wasn't given by God. It was basically given by the beast, basically given by the golden calf, not by the finger of God. I think the finger of God placed the fruit, and a man waited. You know, I personally believe God keeps nothing good from us forever. I think he would have eventually said, yes, now take this. You obeyed, you reserved that 1/10 in the garden. You had everything else in the garden, you reserved that 1/10, so now here, have this. Be as the Son of God. That may just be speculative. I don't know, but I was just trying to find out the dichotomy of what Jesus was saying about being a Son of God.
I couldn't hear you.
What Jesus was saying about. I was trying to understand this. When I come to that conclusion, I was trying to understand what Jesus meant by being a Son of God.
What do you think he said?
I think he quoted, when he was questioned, like I said earlier, he was questioned about it, and he quoted David, I have said you are all gods, concerning God. That's what God said to David. I have said you are all gods, you are all sons of the Most High, but man will fall like every other ruler. But you will die like man will, that's Psalm 82, line 6-7. So, as God said, there's no other like me in all the earth.
One question that I have on the issue of the tree of knowledge.
The tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now, man didn't wait on that. He decided he wanted to know good and evil because Eve said it looked good, so he wanted it. She wanted it, and she handed it to the man, and he wanted it. But
what do you mean she? You mean Eve?
Eve was the first one to take the fruit. But it was the fruit of knowledge. Now, man seemed to have everything he wanted, but he wanted more. He wanted the knowledge to be as a god. The serpent said that you will be, he knows very well you will be as a god the day you eat this fruit. But there was punishment involved because I think if God gave it, not the serpent, not the beast, not the golden calf, we would have been sons of God. I think that the Jewish people would have been sons of God right when they received the mount, the law on the mount with the one finger. I think they would have been placed by the finger of God, all of them, as sons of God, and not sons of the golden calf, not sons of the beast.
I wonder if maybe in the scope of things...
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be in
the... Yeah, I agree. Just as when Moses first asked God, how do I know you are God? He said, take your shepherd's staff, which is a kind of a mild, beautiful thing, leading the sheep peacefully over the shepherd dales and over the mountain, and throw it down, and it will turn into a serpent, and then pick it up again. Then you will know I am God. It was twice established, but then established as it was the first time. So the law was twice established, thrown down by Moses as a seed that fell and turned up as a fruit, and it grew, but it was twice established, but it's meant to be raised again. And I think that that's the whole point of the resurrection story of Jesus. The law was meant to be raised again. A lot of Christians think the law is almost like a something you look at with gloves on or something, like it's not a good thing. But Jesus, when his first sermon on the mount, took place on the mount, he said, think not I've come to abolish the law, I've come to fulfill the law, which, to my interpretation, is to raise it up. The sin of God, the beast removed, the sin of golden calf removed with the intent of God's finger. Well, anyway, G.R., again, I'm getting weary, and I think we've basically covered about it all.
Well, I still have a couple of questions.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it another time. I don't think today, though, but we'll get to it another time.
Okay, sounds good. But here I'd like for you to think about one thing.
Yeah.
That may be... in the garden,
yeah,
and the fruit of the knowledge
of the knowledge of good and evil,
was actually a test.
It was a test, just as the test of the golden calf was a test. God made the people walk through the fire of the test of the golden calf. It was a test, but what I believe is God would have eventually given it.
But here's my point, is that maybe that would have been the case. But going back to our original young man who is trying to...
Yeah, he's trying to learn, he's trying to approach God through knowledge, right? I think it's you can learn, I think knowledge is only where faith is lacking. And if you have the faith and you have the love of God, the love of this God you have faith in, you don't necessarily have to have the knowledge. You can glory in God's wisdom in the knowledge, but you can't glory in your own wisdom. And if you try to approach God through knowledge, you're only glorying in your own knowledge. You're only glorying in your own wisdom. That's kind of like a golden calf, a wonderfully crafted thing, beautiful to look at, but which somehow a lot of people always choose over what God gave with his one finger. And I think Christian Gentiles, hating the Jews and treating them as lepers for so many centuries, they made a golden calf out of Jesus. You know, but I think it's meant to be. It's meant to be raised up. It's meant to be raised up. It's meant to be cast down, meant to be raised up, meant to be twice established, and then established as it was the first time, just as the staff of Moses. I mean, that's why I believe that the Bible itself is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The law itself is the Bible, is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And I believe to the end of my days.
So why is it, and what is the purpose of all of these people who are studying the Bible and immersing?
Well, if you study it to love the God who gave it, and obey that God, lay the feasts and the festivals and all that through obedience out of love, I think that's placed by God's finger. If it's severe and harsh, that's placed by the camp. But I think it's meant to be. I think that's the knowledge of good and evil. The staff was a shepherd's staff, a mild image of leading the sheep peacefully, who can be led. Sheep who love to be led out of love for God. And it's turned down and thrown down into the most cunning of beasts, the serpent, and it's raised up again. And I think that's the whole meaning of the Bible. Twice established and established as it was the first time.
So are you optimistic?
I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic, but I just wonder, since I don't believe in these voices and the visions, I wonder whether I should even talk about these things in the first place.
I can't hear you, David.
Yeah, I shouldn't even be the one to talk about these things in the first place. I shouldn't write about them, since I don't seem to have a mandate, really, from God. I mean, I've seen voices and visions that have told me to write, but I can't. Somehow they've always been a little bit crazy.
You're fading, David.
All right. So anyway, we're fading maybe because we're supposed to fade. So anyway, I've had my fill at the table, so I'm going to pass it up.
Okay. Thank you, David. You take care now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.